Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Pinder scored with a fair shuttle. Pinder scored with a second! And Ireland are in the Hockey World Cup final! The second lowest ranked side in the competition!
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, as always, we have a packed show this morning and very shortly I'm going to be joined by our own Ken Doherty to cover the papers. In racing, we'll be chatting to Brendan Duke, racing enthusiast, as he previews this weekend's races and shares his lucky 15. Declan Drake will be on the line to listen and talk to us about the looking ahead to the two provincial finals tomorrow, Cork against Kerry and Mayo against Galway. And in football, we have Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call to chat all about the League of Ireland actions. Huge, huge weekend in rugby as well. We'll be talking to former Leinster and Ireland and, of course, British Lions Shane Byrne about the Lions Tour and that first test, 5 o'clock this evening in Cape Town. I can't wait. It's going to be a cracking match. Deirdre Smith is going to be talking golf with us, of course, to recap on the Open and reflect on that wonderful win of Seamus Powers in the PGA Tour. And in cricket, we have Richard Holdsworth of Cricket Ireland to look back at the recent South African series as well as Ireland's preparation for the T20 World Cup. And our guest this morning, we'd be delighted to be joined on the line by Mohammed Mohammed, co-founder of Her Sport, to chat about the Olympics and all of the female athletes that we have involved as the Olympics gets underway. Very, very exciting stuff indeed. As usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget we're on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Okay, time to have a chat with our very own Ken Doherty this morning. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Great to be back enjoying this weather. Got out for a wonderful game of golf during the week as well. And up in Powers Court there, it was beautiful.
The
weather's just out of this world.
How are you hitting them?
I'm hitting them all right, actually. I'm looking forward to getting you back, getting a few bob off next week. Maybe we'll get a hold of you and get out for a game. But no, it's going okay.
My new nickname on the golf course now is Four Right.
Is what?
Four right.
Excellent.
Because that's where my ball goes every off the tee every time.
Until you get back and you're playing me, of course. Then suddenly you've got it all straight again. Everything sorted out.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
You have a tournament coming up on Monday, actually, haven't you?
I have, yeah, playing in the Championship League. It's been going on for the last week, and I'm playing Monday. So looking forward to getting the old queue back out and dusting the cobwebs off it. And it's a league sort of base, four players in each group, and then the top player qualifies for the next stage. So and it's only over four frames, so there's a possibility of a draw and, of course, a win. 3 points for a win, one for a draw. So it's quite a short format, but it's quite good in a way. You know, it's sort of innovative and it's new and it's they brought it in last year. You know, but it's really, really good. A lot of players like it. And you can play in polo shorts as well because of the weather's been so hot. You can ditch the dicky bows and put on a polo short, and I can show off my freckles up here.
I can't wait to see your guns, Kate. Have you been pumping out the old dumbbells? You have?
No, I haven't. I was with Jimmy White there. We were down. I was down in Epsom with him, and we went to the local David Lyons. You know, with Kevin Kelly is manager, and we had a little swim, and then we had something to eat, and we got the cards out. We started playing cards by the pool, and one of Jimmy's friends took a picture and posted on Instagram. Well, the stick we got, milk bottles. What were you playing? Strip poker? Kevin had his shirt on. Jimmy and I had our at our tops out, we were in our swimming trunks. Oh my goodness, the stick was coming in, flying in from all angles. All
angles. Compared to you, lads.
Everything from Casper, the friendly ghost, to milk bottles, bodies, you know. So, they've no guns, not like you, Reg, not like you.
Fair enough. I'll have to give you a bit of program to start working on if you're going to be wearing polo shirts. I can't have you looking bad.
Oh, I know.
Bit of news there. I see Paul Pogba has loads of chat about PSG. What are you making of all of that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of my friends are Man United fans. I sort of, a lot of them sort of are going to hope that he goes, like, to be honest, you know. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm not like that. I think he's a big player. I think he'd be badly missed. But it looks like he's holding out. I mean, you know what his agent is like, that Mino Raiola. Yeah. Very money driven, and wants him to go to PSG for maybe 50 million. He has 1 year, of course, left on his contract. And United, though, if they don't, they're negotiating already. If they don't negotiate, they don't want the contract to just run down and lose 50 million. So he may be sold, you know, to PSG if he forces their hand, Manchester United. But it's a dangerous game to play. I'd like him to stay. I really would. I thought he had a really good World Cup. I know he's been up and down with Manchester United. He hasn't really performed since he came back from Juventus. I know he's had a few injuries and stuff like that. And sometimes he looks disinterested, but I think he's still a world-class player. And that's the thing about these players. They are world-class. And, you know, if they get their head right and his heart's in the right place, he could really perform and do a really good job for United. So I would like to see him live, but if he does, he's going to go to PSG for maybe 50 mil.
Yeah, it was weird in the Euros. He played well, you know. I mean, he was so important in that team, like that midfield role, feeding balls in. He played really, really well. I can't work him out because I can't stand him. Yeah. I think he's just, you know, I don't think he puts in the effort when he's with United. He kind of walks around the place.
He's a bit of a show pony, isn't he?
Yeah, I find him very overrated when he's playing for United. Yet when he's playing that international stuff, and especially in the Euros, I thought, he's just a different player entirely.
Yeah. I mean, he scored that worldly goal, didn't he, against Switzerland? Mm. And then, a few minutes later, he gives the ball away, gets caught in a tackle in the middle of the pitch, gives the ball away, and then they go down and score a goal, Switzerland, and then they score the equaliser, and all of a sudden they're knocked out on penalties.
Yeah.
He's sort of one of those Jekyll and Hyde figures, but when he plays well, he's brilliant, you know. And you know, players like that are hard to find. You know, they're very, very skillful. He's big, he's powerful, he's very strong. But you need the effort. If you don't have the effort, Reg, you know, no matter how skillful, you know that from your own game. Yeah. If you don't have a team effort and a team sort of mentality, then you're no good to the rest of the team, basically. You know, so when he's on it, he's good. But when he's not, he's bad. You know, and it'll be a lot of Manchester United fans, and I'm sure they're listening in, will be sort of, 50% of me saying, please stay, 50% of me saying, please go, you know.
Yeah, I'd say it'd be more than that. I think there's more want him out than in now at this stage.
Yeah.
Which is an unusual thing to say against a player like that, but I suppose they're probably thinking, look, we've given it enough time now at this stage. It's time to change and look for some fresh blood. So
The good news is that, Sancho was, the news of Sancho and was released yesterday, of course, that he'd sign, and you'd seen him in the Manchester United top with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, which is great news. He's a quality player, and he'd be a great addition to Man United. And, of course, they're still in negotiations with Varane as well from, the French national side. Of course, he's playing for Real Madrid at the moment. If they can get him as a centre-half, he will be a great partner for Harry Maguire, for sure, you know. And so they will be two excellent signings. And the news as well that they're in for Ruben Neves from Wolves, who's been very, very impressive over the last couple of seasons. And that would be quite a move as well, because he would join up with his fellow compatriot Bruno Fernandes, both from Portugal, of course. And he would be a really good addition to the side as well.
Absolutely. You know, Sancho's a big one too, though. I really do think he's a huge signing. I mean, he's only, what is he, on 21 or something like that? And
21, something like that. Yeah, so they'd have they'd have himself, Mason Greenwood, and Marcus Rashford, who are all only, you know, just 20s, in the 20, you know, 21, you know, and they would be, the three of those would be a fantastic triumvirate.
Seeds then for the future.
Yeah.
Putting together the bones. Absolutely. Solid team that can carry them on for a number of years rather than just temporarily filling.
I think they have to invest, you know, to sort of be able to compete with the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City for next year, and even Chelsea.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Chelsea are a top team, and of course winning the Champions League. They're going to be looking to buy as well. So to compete with those going forward, they have to really spend big, and they need a couple of players. And certainly Sancho is a good start, you know, and Varane would be a great addition as well, you know.
Absolutely. You mentioned my own sport. You'll be watching the Lions later today, will you?
Oh, definitely. 5 o'clock, isn't it?
Yeah,
really looking forward to it. They've had sort of a mixed sort of start, haven't they, in their tour so far?
It's been a strange tour, really. It's funny, it's a tour that I don't particularly agree with. I think it shouldn't really have gone ahead. They've gone ahead with it. And funnily enough, I was talking to Ron Nagara there recently, and I said that to him, and he said, well, what a lot of people don't understand is just how badly it would affect the club game. And I didn't realise this myself, you know, how badly it would affect the club game if they didn't get to have it go ahead. Because obviously you've got the World Cup coming up in 2023. Getting release of the players would be almost impossible. But the money that's generated from the Lions filters right the way down to the club game, and it would just have such a detrimental effect. And I hadn't realised that, so it kind of made it a bit more understanding as to why it went ahead. But now that it is gone ahead, it's, you know, all the tests are going to be in Cape Town. It doesn't have the same feel to it, but now that the matches are going to go ahead and, you know, the test sides have been announced, obviously I'm looking forward to the game. But I find it strange. I do find Gatland strange. I know, look, it is what Gatland does. I'm going to be talking to Shane Byrne just after 10 o'clock about all this. But it's what Gatland does. Yeah. He likes to come out and, you know, court controversy and pick teams and make decisions in selection that kind of make him either look like a genius or a fool. That's basically the way it is.
I know, I mean, I was strange. You know, I mean, he picks Conor Murray as captain and then doesn't start him in the first test. Very, very strange. You know, there's three Irish starting.
But the funny thing about that, right, is that you can understand why he hasn't picked Conor Murray as well, in that the form, even in those games leading up to the test, Conor's form hasn't been as good as what it could be. So you can understand, and a lot of rugby people do understand his reasoning for not picking Murray as the starting and having him there as a backup. But then why pick him as captain? Because if he was going to be captain before Alan Wynne-Jones came back, regardless of what he was going to do, he was going to have to pick him to start.
Yeah.
So it's very odd. And even bringing Wynne-Jones back, Alan Wynne-Jones back, a lot of people are kind of raising an eyebrow going, well, okay, I understand how important he is as a leader and everything else, but, you know, he's only just dislocated his shoulder and he hasn't had any matches under his belt. How fit can he be? So I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into the conversation with Shane Byrne about that after 10 o'clock and getting his thoughts on it.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? It's like, I mean, when I relate it back to football, you know, what we've just seen at the championships with Gareth Southgate and Harry Kane. He wasn't playing well, but he was still captain, but he was number one on the team sheet every time because he was captain. You know, we couldn't drop him. But with Gatland, it's a different kettle of fish with him. As you said, he likes to make big decisions. He likes to court a little bit of controversy at times. And he likes to sort of say, well, listen, I'm boss. I'll make the decisions and I'll live and die by those, you know?
What I can't work out either, Ken, is like you and I like to have a look at the odds on things. And the bookies have had the Lions in at favourite. Now, I think they've reverted back to both teams are evens now. But during the week, they had the Lions as favourite, 9-10 as opposed to 11-10 for the South African team. And I can't work that out. You're playing the world champions in Cape Town and their A team have just beaten you, you know, in a warm-up game. And it's a completely different Lions team to what you'd expect. How they've been made favourites or even just at even money is beyond me. But, you know, time will tell. The bookies don't get it wrong too often, you know.
Time to stay in, Reggie, isn't it? Time to stay in.
There you go.
You're very important on Dublin Talk and Sport.
You can read between the lines there, Ken, can't you?
You were saying it very subtly, but I knew exactly what you mean. We'll be breaking into the piggy bank later to get those covers on South Africa without no loyalty there. What do they say? You're back with your head, not with your heart.
Exactly. There you have it. The Olympics got underway as well. You'll be watching a bit of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do love it. It's going to be a different feel to it, but what a beautiful place to have, you know, the Olympics there with the backdrop in Tokyo and everything. It's just magnificent. It looks fantastic. Everybody's very excited about it, and I'm sure all the Irish team. I saw Shane Larry, you know, very proud Irishman, going off to the airport in his Irish jersey to hook up with the national team. I saw pictures of Andy Murray as well. Of course, he's there for the tennis. You know, they're all very proud. I mean, it must be a very special feeling to be part of that Olympic village, to be part of that team, whatever nation you're with. But just the atmosphere, Reggie, you know, to represent your country at the highest level.
Was there ever any chat of snooker going into it?
Yeah, I mean, we've been trying for years and years and years. I mean, it possibly could have got in Beijing in 2008 because snooker was so popular in China and they had a, you know, really good chance of medals with Ding Junhui and Liang Wenbo at the top of the game. But it's up to the country themselves. They have all the exact sports, but then they're allowed to pick sort of their own sports as well, or sports that they is very popular in their own country. Like softball was picked this year for Japan because they're so good at softball, you know? Okay. So that's in the Olympics, which hasn't been for a while. So snooker, they've been knocking on the door, and it's just trying to break down barriers. It's very political. It's very, very difficult. Well, but they're going to... Well, it's continuing to do so. And, you know, maybe eventually, you know, not when you and I are still alive, Reggie, but maybe eventually down the road. But it would have been, I think that would have been a great achievement for anybody, you know, just to represent your country at that level. It's very, very proud, you know.
Absolutely. Mm. Okay, look, I've run out of time. It's great chatting to you. I haven't spoken to you for a while, but you'll be back.
Anyway,
we're going to get out.
Back, yeah. I'm looking forward to getting back. Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to getting back now in the next week or so, and looking forward to hooking up and back into the studio and then back out on the golf course.
Excellent. Okay. Well, take care of yourself.
Yeah. I'll be steaming in to South Africa later on.
Yeah. I didn't say that. Good luck.
Okay.
Talk to you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Take care. That's our own Ken Doherty there. Filling us in and everything that's going. That's interesting about the snooker. Yeah, I'm sure they've been pushing hard to try and get that in. When you think of some of the sports that are in the Olympics, you'd imagine, you know, make sense that snooker would get in there. But obviously, political reasons, as you said, that's not to be the case. Okay, we're going to take a break now. But still to come in this hour, we're going to be talking horse racing with Brendan Duke. Richard Holsworth is going to be talking to us from Cricket Ireland about the South African series and the preparation for the T20 World Cup. And in a moment, we will be talking to Mohammed, the founder of Her Sport, about the Olympics, which opening ceremony kicked off last night. So we're going to be talking to him about the various different athletes taking part and where our medal chances might be. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. You can text us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Well, as we said, the Olympics got underway last night and there's plenty of Irish interest in it as well. I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Mohammed, who's the co-founder of Her Sport, which of course is Ireland's only media platform dedicated to women in sport and the promotion of that as well. Good morning, Mohammed. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, great to have you on. Very excited to hear what you have to say about the Olympics, because obviously it's the biggest show in town at the moment, and we have a great contingent of athletes going out there. But in your side of things, you'll be particularly focused on the female athletes. And I saw Kelly Harrington, of course, with the opening ceremony. What are your thoughts on it all? How many athletes do we have going out, first of all, in general? And what's the kind of breakdown between male and female?
So, actually, Team Ireland have 116 athletes competing across 19 different sports. So that's about a 50% increase from Rio. The split is around 55 females to 61 males. And I suppose if you want to put that into perspective, back in 1964, when Tokyo last held the Olympics, Ireland had one female athlete competing, so it's great to see how far we've come.
Absolutely. It's incredible to see how far we've come. And I think in general, it's funny, I was talking to Jane, our producer here before the show. I was just saying how I was down with my young lads down in the local GAA pitch last night. They were playing, and just to see all the amount of girls, playing GAA down there and how much it's grown. Because I can certainly remember, Mohammed, when I was a young lad, there were no girls playing sport. That's just the sad reality of it. Whether it be football or GAA or rugby or anything else, you were kind of confined to tennis if you were a girl. There wasn't a whole lot else around. So it's amazing to see how much of a growth there has been in those areas. And then obviously you bring it up to international level here and the Olympics. The stage is the biggest stage in the world, and it's good to see that it's almost a 50-50 split.
No, yeah, for sure. And I think the more people get to see our female athletes on TV competing at such a high level, it really gives those young girls someone to look up to and give them that belief that they can get there as well. So like you say, it's great to see, and hopefully long may continue, because also the Irish athletes, the female athletes, are really the ones who you'd say might come home with a few medals, which is always great, and everyone loves to see that as well.
Okay, and who would you be picking out, or where are our strongest hopes, do you think?
So, obviously, with her sport, I'm looking at things from the women's sport side of things. Yeah. We're looking at rowing and boxing as Ireland's biggest medal hopes. So, Sunita Pasupuri is a two-time world and European champion single scull. She's definitely one to watch and is in the conversation for gold. So, she competed at two different Olympics back in 2012 and 2016. And she is currently in the quarterfinals after comfortably winning her heat. And then, actually, this morning, the women's four of Emily Hegarty, Fiona Murta, Afra Keo, and Emer Lam, whose sister also competed in 2016. They are into the final on Wednesday, and that's actually one to watch, and it's really exciting because they pushed the Australian crew, who are hotly favoured to win the gold medal. They actually finished 0.23 seconds behind them, so that's going to be really exciting to see what happens there.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually, the growth of rowing in this country. Of obviously, successes in the past and plenty of publicity around that have made that the case. It's again, it's another example of a sport that you wouldn't necessarily relate to women, but that's a huge growth area as well. I know we have spoken to Rowing Ireland before on the show, and that is a huge growth area as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think in London 2012, Sunita was the only Irish rower representing Team Ireland at the Games. And this year, there are six crews representing, and three of them are female. So, or four of them are female. So that just shows you the progress that they've made. And like I say, if there's one race that you want to tune into, is the four on Wednesday, because I think they might throw out the surprise.
Yeah. And who's the stiffest competition then would tend to come from what countries? I suppose Australia would always be big. UK are huge as well in rowing, so.
Yeah, Australia, New Zealand, Russia are probably Sunita's biggest competitor in the single scull. So that'll be interesting. And then, like I said, even in the boxing, so obviously boxing is very difficult to predict because, you know, we've seen before. With judges, things can be very subjective. But in terms of boxing, we have Kelly Harrington, who was the flag bearer for Ireland yesterday, Michaela Walsh. Both of them are tipped to do quite well. And I'd even give a shout-out to Aoife O'Rourke, who is a gold medalist. I think in terms of boxing, Ireland are definitely one of the best overall with their boxing performance director, and Bernard Dunn. He's done a really good job. I think Ireland are, in terms of movement, boxing IQ, technique, they're definitely up there. So, If things go well, if there's no controversy, we might see a few Irish people on the podium there as well.
Yeah, Kelly Harrington, of course, she's in the lightweight category. So St. Mary's Boxing Club. So that's certainly a huge medal hope as well. We'd be hoping things can go there. Of course, golf as well is another area that there's big interest in. Leona Maguire having a good run of form. Her first Olympics was in 2016, and the hockey as well, of course, is taking on I think, is that starting out today, the hockey?
Yeah, so Ireland play South Africa today. They're in a tough group, but I mean, I'd be daft to count this Irish hockey team out, because we saw what they did in 2018, and they're the first Irish female hockey team to make it to an Olympics, so they're definitely history makers in that sense. But they take on South Africa. They should win that game, hopefully. South Africa are the lowest ranked team in the competition, so it'll be very important for them to get off to a good start with the Netherlands coming up, who are the number one ranked team in the world. So that won't be easy.
Definitely not, but in with a shout, no question about that. The other one I'm interested in as well, I read a little earlier, Meghan Ryan. She's only the second Irish gymnast, if I'm not mistaken, to take place in the Olympics. So, gymnastics is such a hugely competitive sport, but it's one that it definitely has grown in Ireland. I don't know how many times I'd be down at a football pitch or a rugby pitch, and there's girls doing gymnastics, flipping around beside me here on the sideline, young girls. So the support that's grown massively in popularity here in Ireland.
Yeah, no, she is the second Irish female gymnast to be competing, so that's really exciting. And like you say, gymnastics is quite big in Ireland, so it'll be really interesting to see how she gets on. I think she competes with Douglas Gymnastics Club, so she's doing everyone proud there, and it'll be interesting to see how she goes. I think she goes tomorrow morning, so that'll be really interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. No, that's one to look forward to. The other one then that we would have maybe ideas around and hopes for a medal might be Natalia Coyle in the modern pentathlon, of course. Hugely successful athlete.
Yeah, no, for sure. Natalia is definitely one that I've been highlighting as an outside medal chance as well. She's competing in her third Olympic Games this year, so I think she's made the progress. I think she finished ninth the first time, sixth in 2016, so the natural progression should be third this time around, but we'll wait and see. She definitely has the international pedigree and experience, and I wouldn't put it past her to get on that podium.
Yeah, well, we'd certainly be fingers crossed on that one. For a lot of people, I suppose, the traditional sports in the Olympics would be athletics, and that'd be the big one that they'd be waiting for. I love the Olympics because there's such a broad array of sports and everything to watch. But the athletics is kind of the one that kind of is the finale, if you like, the one that everybody builds up to. Who would it be our big medal hopes, do you think, in the athletics from a female perspective?
I suppose the athletics is difficult because there's so much competition, and like you say, it's the one that everyone looks forward to. But I suppose in terms of medal hopefuls, I think that's maybe a little bit ambitious. I think Ciara McGeen on her day can do anything, and again, I wouldn't write Ciara McGeen off, but the competition with the likes of Laura Muir and all it's quite difficult. But in terms of the 800 metres, Ireland have three competitors. So we have Sheeffer, Clara Butner, Nadia Power and Louise Shanahan. I would like to think that we'd at least have one of them in the final, which will be brilliant. I think what we can hope for is our Irish athletes competing to their maximum, breaking personal best, breaking records. That's what everyone will be hoping to do, more so than a medal would be a bonus, really. It's quite difficult on that field.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it is. There's no question about it. It's one of the most competitive areas in the world is the athletics, and you know, for us to compete at that level, it takes a lot. But you know, I've been very impressed recently with the level of success that we've seen amongst our Irish athletes, both male and female. So it's great to see progress being made with that. Anybody else you'd like to point out in particular before I let you go?
I suppose to maybe give a shout out to Tanya Watson. She's the first Irish female diver to secure a place at the Olympic Games. So that'll be really exciting. She's only 19, so that's a massive achievement for her. And then maybe a more obscure sport that people might not be familiar of is judo. So we actually have Megan Fletcher competing in the judo. She will be the second Irish female to represent Ireland, Team Ireland at the Olympics. And she'll also be competing alongside her brother, Ben. So that's a pretty cool skill. Pretty cool story. It's not the only brother and sister for Team Ireland. Aidan and Michaela Walsh are also there in the boxing. So pretty cool stories.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. One they'll have memories of forevermore, and one we can watch very closely. Okay, Mohammed, been really good chatting to you. I've enjoyed that, and you've given us some really interesting names to keep an eye out for over the course of these Olympics, and something to look forward to. And we'll chat to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Take care. That's Mohammed there of Her Sport, a fantastic media platform that is really trying to promote women's sport and give it a voice and make it a lot more heard and front and centre in our thoughts, because unfortunately, as much as sport is progressing, media coverage on it is still only in around 6%, and that's the level of coverage that women's sport gets. So that's not a stat that we want to continue, so we'll make sure that that changes over time. Okay, we're time to turn our attention to cricket now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Richard Holdsworth of Cricket Ireland. Good morning, Richard. How are you today?
Good morning. Very good indeed. Thank you. Another bright sunny day in Dublin.
Absolutely, yeah. I dare say it, perfect cricket weather.
But it has been. It's been extraordinary with the challenges that we've all had over the last sort of 14, 15 months, and particularly last summer we lost a lot of the cricket season because of the pandemic. We started domestic cricket back late this summer. It's been fantastic for us not to see too much rain and to allow all the domestic and the international programs to go ahead. So it's been fantastic for us. Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. And there has been a bit going on, of course, with the South African series, which got off to a nice start back on the 13th of July with a win. But unfortunately, the following two games didn't quite go our way.
No, indeed. I mean, look, we started off actually with one of the few days of rain that we've seen in the last couple of months. We were in a really good position in the first game, and then the rain came down, and unfortunately, we couldn't finish that game. As you said, we had a fantastic second game, really put a lot of things together in all departments, batting, bowling, fielding, and the guys played tremendously well to beat us. That's our first victory against South Africa in an international. So it was a huge effort in a one-day international, and that gave us 10 points in the World Cup Super League. Yeah. We lost that final game, but tied the series. And, those points were massively important for the World Cup Super League, which is effectively our World Cup qualification to the next 50-over World Cup. And we're now in the T20 series. It's been a bit more difficult with that. We've come across, some very good South African batsmen, and we've got our final game this afternoon up in Belfast. So hoping for a win there.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. I mean, South African cricket is renowned the world over of being so strong. So, I mean, I know the popularity of cricket in Ireland has increased dramatically over the last number of years, but, it's a bit like, we would have been, I remember in rugby many years ago against the likes of South Africa and Australia and New Zealand, we were struggling quite a bit. So it took time to get to that level where we were able to compete and indeed beat them on a regular basis. And I presume it's somewhat similar at the moment for cricket.
It is very much so. Our captain referred to it as another sort of David and Goliath encounter, and there's no doubt that we're the underdogs there. But I think what's important in our evolution of the sports on the island is that we've now got many more opportunities to play the bigger teams. We, before we became Test playing nation back in 2017, we were getting the likes of England, Australia, maybe once every 4 years for one game. We're now playing this is a six-match series against South Africa. We play Zimbabwe next month. We've got 8 matches against them. So for our players to develop, to give them the experience that they need to compete on the world stage when we get to World Cups, hopefully, it's really important to have more and more games. You're going to learn through one-off games, but not enough to then try and put some of those things into action. So it's been really, really great for the players. This series currently is the biggest series we've ever played in Ireland. We've never played a six-match series. Quite often we'd maybe get a couple of ODIs, one-day internationals, and then not be able to keep that team here long enough to play them in a few more games, perhaps T20. Mm. And obviously we've got T20s at the moment. We're preparing for a World Cup in October, which is now moved from India to the UAE because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So having these games here on home soil, thankfully in front of a bit of a crowd, the players have been starved of fans watching them. So for them to play at home in this series and to be allowed some spectators, albeit not a maximum amount, is fantastic for them. And they're learning all the time, and these these series will hopefully give them that experience to compete more regularly against the big boys.
You mentioned the World Cup there in October, of course, and preparations are going well for that. Where do you source most of, or where are most of the players playing, and is it still ongoing scouting, or would the squad be pretty much finalised at this stage?
Yeah, the squad would pretty close to be finalised, to be honest. Now, you know, there's been a huge amount of work done by our coaches and selectors in understanding what roles each player is going to play. We've had a couple of injuries. Fortunately, those players are pretty much back playing now, which is good. We've got another five T20s after this series against Zimbabwe. Okay. We'll have another short series in September. And then we're hoping to go to the UAE early, about 10, 12 days early, to play in a series there. So we've got plenty of games coming up to prepare them, but that squad will be selected a month out from the tournament. So we'll be looking to select the squad around the sort of 10th of September. As I said, we've probably got about 8 or 9 games before then. I think the selectors are pretty close to understanding what the squad looks like, but there's still an opportunity with those games ahead over the next sort of 6-8 weeks. There's still an opportunity for the odd player, you know, maybe at the latter end of the squad, to stand up and say, you know, you've got to pick me, look what I've done. And that's the beauty of having these games with some context, is, you know, there are more opportunities for the players to put their hand up.
Absolutely. Okay, well, it's very exciting stuff. We wish you the very best of luck in Belfast. I hope that game goes our way. It would be nice to get a result and have the fellas gone in there with a bit of confidence as they prepare. And as you said, there's a lot of games coming up. Good to hear cricket going so well.
I ought to say as well, before, most importantly, our women have been starved of international cricket because of the pandemic. And they start a series against the Netherlands on Monday, a four-match T20 series, and they also have a European T20 qualifier coming up at the end of August. So that's massively important for their preparations for that. And they're playing in Malahide. They're spectators allowed. It'd be great to see some fans there to cheer on our women in green.
Excellent stuff. That's 4 o'clock on Monday, the 26th of July in Malahide. And there are spectators allowed, so any of our listeners who are interested in cricket can make their way along to that. Richard, it's been wonderful talking to you. Thanks for bringing us up to speed with everything that's happening. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Not at all. Thanks very much.
Take care. That's Richard Holsworth there of Cricket Ireland giving us all of the latest news. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, it'll be horse racing. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined by racing enthusiast Brendan Duke on the line. Good morning, Brendan.
How you keeping, Reggie?
I'm keeping great, thanks. Really good form. I have to say, looking out the window at this weather and thinking that the Galway races are starting on Monday brings me back to my youth. I used to spend my entire summers down in Galway because my mother was from down there, and the Galway races was always part of that summer. And it was weather like this from what I remember. So I tell you, it's exciting times and exciting looking forward to Monday and the start of it. I'm sure it probably has a fond place in your heart as well, the Galway races.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's a terrific meeting. The clerk of the course was on earlier this week saying he's had his own troubles with, he can't remember, it hasn't rained in Galway for 3 weeks, and he can't remember when that has ever happened before. Yeah. And even you would have to probably go a long way back in your memory reserves, but they're going to cope. They have a good watering system, so it's all set bare for next week.
I didn't actually catch up on it. Is there any crowds allowed at it at all, or is it still behind?
Oh, okay, so they're letting 1,000 paying public in. Right. And I heard last week, so the owners up to last week, the owners were allowed to have 4 people in per horse, so they'd be guesstimate about 100 horses per day. Okay. Now, I did hear in Nace, I was in Nace on Thursday. I did hear that they're upping that to 8. Now, the only snag is that you basically have to assume that 50% of the things you hear on the race course are false. But I have this from a relatively reputable source that they're letting 8 people in. So you might have 1,800 people. It'll still be a very small crowd, but they might make some sort of an atmosphere.
When it comes to tips, that percentage might be a lot higher, I think, of false. But let's have a look at it anyway. You've picked out a lucky 15. Now, obviously, the cars haven't been declared yet, so there's a little bit of a proviso on some of them. But you've picked out what you see as being some of the best from the week, if you want to go through it with us there.
Yeah, sure. So I've looked at some of the bigger races. So on Tuesday at 6:15, you have this Colin Quinn BMW Mile. Well, Colin should be very happy that this has the potential to be one of the best handicaps ever run in Ireland. Visualization was the beast I came up with. He's rising through the grades at a rate of knots. Won three of his last five. Was second last time out in a three-year-old only handicap at Royal Ascot. Those three-year-old only handicaps at Royal Ascot are usually red-hot form. And the winner has since gone on to go close in another hot handicap in Newmarket. That Ascot race was over 10 furlongs, but this extended mile in Galway, what should be a strongly run race, probably enough of a test. Now, it's no joke trying to win a race like this up from a mark of 103, but he has the help of the three-year-old allowance, an improving horse, and he'd be about 8 or 10 to 1, so we'll give him a life. Then on Tuesday again, the 7:15, this Liberty Star. Now, this is something of a cliff horse of mine. Big eye-catcher 3 runs ago in Roscommon. So I backed him on the back of that in Limerick. Now, there's no two ways about it. He was disappointing in Limerick. But I put it to you, Reggie, that to err is equine, to forgive divine. So I took that principle with me and backed him in Naas last week. And this was just a horror story of a watch. The young fella who rode him that day, Robert Queerty, really talented. He's a 10-pound claimer. Yeah. So he gets to claim quite a lot of weight. But he's much more skillful than you would expect for a jockey who's so inexperienced. But he was coming with his run in Naas anyway, and the horse in front of him started doing the hokey-cokey, and he had to guess whether to go left or right. And unfortunately, young Wherty guessed the wrong way. It was just unfortunate. It wasn't really his fault. So he was locked up the whole way for the last two furlongs. Now, I'm not telling you he would have won, but he would have gone very close. He gets in here off the same mark on Tuesday. An extra half a furlong should suit, and I hope that young Wherty keeps the ride because he can make amends on Tuesday. Yep. Then we have Wednesday, so the Galway Plate, right? But this walk away is interesting off 136. Now, the problem with getting in off a mark of 136 is he needs 16 of the runners ahead of him in the weights to come out. But the last couple of years, that mark would have got you into the race. So let's assume he gets in an unexposed horse. He was well backed for his handicap chase, the debut in the Munster National last October, but took a desperate fall 5 fences from home. So that may have had an effect on him because he was off until the Punchestown Festival earlier this year. Very weak in the betting that day, but ran a huge race, was beaten 14 lengths into second, which sounds a long way, and it is a long way to be fair, but the winner of that race is bordering on top class. This horse is still relatively inexperienced, and his jumping is not both perfect, but Henry de Bromhead and that stable is in absolutely rampant form at the moment. He prides himself on how accurately his horse has jumped, so he's been working away on this horse. He travels really strongly in his race, should be comfortable with the demands of this race, and can go well. He's about a 10 to 1 poke again. And then on the Thursday, the Galway Hurdle. So I'd give Tudor City a life in this race. He won the race 2 years ago and ran respectably in it last year. Yeah. And interesting, he's back down to the same rating as when he did burgle the prize in 2019. Now, possible to argue he's not the force of old. His last couple of efforts on the flat were okay, but slightly below his best on the level. But the owner will probably be over for the week. The horse, as we know, is proven in the rough and tumble of a race like this. And here's the kicker. He's 33 to 1, so we don't need much in our favour to have a little tickle at that kind of a price, do we?
Absolutely not. We'd be all over that 33 to 1. That would be one of our best. That's in Thursday. In which one?
That's in the Galway Hurdle. That's the big race on Thursday. So I've kind of concentrated on the bigger races because these horses are more likely to run. I have a couple of other ones that might run. If you want to have them as alternates, I can give them to you if you have time.
Just give me the names of them real quick because I don't have much time.
Okay, 6:45 Monday, Citronade. And the 5:10 p.m. on Tuesday, Radica.
Radica. Okay, excellent. Okay, Brennan, that is wonderful. We're going to get to chat to you again hopefully next week. We'll get a bit more time. Sorry it was so rushed this morning, but there's some lovely tips there. We're going to have a look at those. And as I said, really looking forward to going and looking forward to chatting to you again. Mind yourself.
Good man, thank you. Bye.
Take care. That's Brendan Duke there, racing enthusiast, giving us his thoughts for the week. Galway, as I said, starts Monday. Really, really great festival, as always, in Ballybrit. Tuesday, the Colm Quinn visualisation. In the 7:15, then Liberty Star would be his choice in that one. Then Wednesday, we go to the Galway Plate, the famous Galway Plate, walk away. And then Thursday, in the equally famous Galway Hurdle, it's Tudor City. And that one is a 33-1 shot. So there's a 6:45 Citronade as well, and a 5:10 Red Dyke as alternates that he can have a look at too, should any of those horses not make the card. Okay, we still have the Lions coverage to come just after the break with Shane Byrne. We've golf with Deirdre Smith. Declan Drake will be on the GA, and Alan Cawley on football. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, please send us your text messages. We'd love to hear from you on 087 11 55 777, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Still loads to come on the show. Deirdre Smith is going to recap on the Open in golf for us, and of course, talk about that wonderful win for Seamus Power last week in the PGA Tour. We're also going to be talking to Declan Drake about the GAA, and Alan Cawley is going to have a chat with us about all the domestic football. But before all of that, I'm delighted to be joined now on the line by Ireland, Leinster and British and Irish Lion, Shane Byrne. Good morning, Shane. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Absolutely wonderful. Had a great week enjoying all of that lovely weather, and looking forward to this big one today. It's a sort of a funny old tour. It's been mixed with kind of, you know, should it have gone ahead, should it not have gone ahead. But it's here now. We're at the Test Series, first test in Cape Town. And I'm actually very excited about it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, there is a bit of a buzz about it, isn't it? It's something that everybody really enjoys. Any rugby supporter really loves the Lions. And watching how they develop and get to where they are, they know the challenges that are there for them. It's always trying to put a team together and the debates that go around all that. But the first test is what it's all about. And yeah, it's a decent size, but they have a serious hill to climb,
one,
I think.
Which one? The South African or the Lions one?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing, isn't it? Okay, the South Africans have had their own trials and tribulations, as we know, with the COVID issues they've had. But they've reverted back to pretty much, you know, a World Cup winning side. And these guys will know each other inside out. And we saw from the heap of them that played in the South African A game. The thing that the South African, their play is based upon is massive, massive physicality. And if they're doing that, which they were, they, you know, a lot of their game follows that. And they, which means that they're quite comfortable. They look like they're reasonably well prepared. So there might be a bit of ring rusty, a pass might drop every now and again. But the things that they're good at, I expect them to be very good at the weekend. Well, what am I talking about today?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the physicality, you and I both know it. It's hard to explain to people just how big and physical these fellas are. They're monstrous is the only way you can describe them when you come up. I mean, you know, I from our day, coming up against the likes of both and these fellas, and they just, you know, they really are monstrous men. And to try and match that physicality is the difficulty that we have. And it seems to be what Gatland has almost picked his touring squad on, is to try and match that physicality. But you'd wonder with some of the selections around that, though, has he got it right? Like, I mean, I know Gatty always wants to be somewhat controversial in his selections and make some calls that some might say are off the wall. But in general, certainly when you look at the likes of Conan at number 8, he seems to be going for that physicality battle.
Yeah, no, look, when the tour was picked, you know, with the likes of our own Bundy Aki and guys like that getting in, that it was, yeah, he was going for a direct brand of rugby to meet physical with physical. Look, you're dead right with the South Africans. You know what you're going to get. Like, they're the favourite international side to play against, because if plan A, which is beat you up, didn't work, they would do plan A more. Yeah. That was the way they think. So if you meet them head on, you have a good chance against them. And then with the selection that he's done for the game today, you know, Van der Merwe obviously will be the one in the backs that you'd be looking at going, look, you know, he has a hell of a challenge on his hands with Christian Colbe against him. You know, he's going to serious defensive questions asked him, but he's there for his physicality. He's played reasonably well. Mm. He's made a few defensive errors, but he would be typifying it. And then you've got to look at the back row. Laws and Curry, two guys who played in that South African A game. There's a few guys actually benefited from playing in that game as well, Wynn Jones as well. And, you know, they went with... Curry in particular was immensely physical on that day. And the choice he had was either go with Byrne and Watson starting and then bring the huge physicality off the bench, but he's not. He's done the opposite. He's gone with the huge physicality to start with and then bring on probably the more athletic technical guys in the end of the game to just go on and cause chaos. And that's the way he's looked at it. But yeah, there's it's a kind of a mixed bag across the selection. You know, Daly wouldn't be known for his physicality. He'd certainly be challenged. But when I saw him getting picked in the team with Henshaw, because you would assume Henshaw being fit, he was going to get picked somewhere. Mm. And when I saw the two of them paired, I was thinking, yeah, look, that's the way he's thinking. Mm. But like, it's still a fantastic team. You know, I love the fact Hogg is finally getting his test start. He's waited a long time. It was something I think you and I talked about.
Yeah.
You know, a long time ago, is that I wanted to see a line store where he could start at fullback, which means I think that they're not just planning on meeting physicality bish bosh. They're going to push this South African team around, as in spread them wide and, you know, create play rather than just a slugfest.
I think you're right. I think that the selection dictates that he's trying to pick on form. Certainly, Ali Price, there's not too many that would argue that his form is not better at the moment. And I think, you know, there weren't too many raised eyebrows when that happened. I suppose the only reason there was a raised eyebrow was because he went with Conor Murray as tour captain. So
yeah,
that when Alan Wynne-Jones wasn't there, you would have thought that meant that Conor Murray was an automatic first-choice selection to start.
Yeah.
How does he not be that first-choice selection week later? So that's probably the biggest question mark people would have around that. But
because of the man, the Superman, Alan Wynne-Jones, coming back from a pop shoulder, like an absolutely incredible thing. Listen, we've all done shoulder injuries. We all know how hard he had to come back. And it's obviously back to the degree where he's there and he's starting the test team. And that's it. You see, that the package that Murray was offering included a huge amount of experience, calmness and everything like that, and leadership. And that's exactly what he was there for and why his name would have been on the starting test team. But when Alwyn came back, that, you know, I suppose it wasn't as necessary. And then it was back to just general play. And Ali Price has had a better line store. And that fits really in a nutshell. Like, look, Murray will still be a good man if we have our noses in front. You know, in the last, he'd be perfect guy to bring on to keep the game calm and his leadership role within that. Or if something happens to Alan Jones during the game, he'd be a good guy to be able to call upon. But when it's just flat out, that's Jack Conan's a great example of this. Some players on Lions tours just take their opportunity. No one expected Jack Conan to go on the Lions, in truth. Like, he was a bolter, and everyone went, oh, wow, okay, fair enough, yeah. And but he hasn't put a foot wrong. He's taken his opportunities, and that's why he's a test starter. And Ali Price is along that lines too. Mm-hmm. Every game he played brilliantly. And his delivery was so crisp, so fast, that hopefully this is something that the Lions are going to take advantage of and use that speed to move this big South African team around.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt the selection in my mind is exactly around what you're saying, getting that back line moving, trying to pick holes and be creative in that back line. But that completely depends on them getting amazing first phase ball from that pack of forwards. Now, this is where the conundrum starts, because you have to question. First of all, I hear you about Alan Wynne-Jones being Superman, but Superman hasn't played in quite some time and he's match rusty and he's got a popped shoulder, and there's a question mark about that. Luke Cowan-Dickie was knocked out a few weeks ago. A little bit of a question mark around that. In the front row, you know, Wynne-Jones, Tyke Furlong's going to be up against Oxenche. you know, pressure, massive pressure in that front row. And then, you know, you're looking at Courtney Lowe starting at six. Okay, Jack and Tom Curry form is good. But like Peter, Steph Dutoit, Smith and Khaleesi there in that back row for South Africa are phenomenal. Now, yeah, if the Lions don't get any ball, which could happen, given that that monstrous pack that they're up against, there'll be no room for that back line to do anything.
Yeah, no, that is the key. What you've just described there is the biggest challenge that they have, is that, yes, they have the firepower to do what they want to do. They have, you know, ability all over the place, but they have the first challenge. It's not about general play. It's not about how they attack. It's about the first little part of that is securing possession, because that is particularly the back row for South Africa. They just are devastators. You know, they are just immense physical players, but also technically they're very, very smart, very astute, and they pop up in defense in particular in places that it's incredible, and they just mess up your play. So that is the first challenge that is going to be there. It's all right having Courtney Lawes and Tom Curry there for their physicality, but they have to technically be superb back rows, because, you know, it'll influence the game how that battle goes.
And there are no slouches in that back line either. Like, Faf de Klerk's form is amazing. Andre Pollard as well. Then you've got Damien Deland in the centre. And they're all always trying to get that ball to Cheslin Colby on the wing. And, I mean, I watched him in you know, the build-up games. Like, his footwork is incredible. That, like, gets an inch of space and he's gone. I just wonder, like, I know Van der Merwe is there to try and stop that, but... You know,
I presume they, like, one on one, Van der Merwe can't stop Colby. So I would presume that they're going to have something that the, you know, the outside centre pushes out, and it'll be Henshaw that has to cover more ground or something to close off that space. Because given, you know, any, we saw it in the A game, given any sort of space, even when there isn't space, he finds a way through. He's arguably one of the best players in the world at the moment. An absolute dynamite in France when he's playing. And he's a joy to watch, but we just don't want him to be given too much running time today. But it's going to be a huge challenge, no doubt. And that's why it raised a lot of eyebrows. People would have thought maybe just a straight swap there, put Williams in, because the aerial battle is obviously going to be huge here as well. Van der Merwe, you know, okay under the high ball, but Liam Williams is a master at it, and so everybody was thinking that way. But look, Gatland has his game plans, and hopefully they have a defensive structure around you know, keeping Cheslin Colby under wraps.
Well, you mentioned their game plan and also aerial battle. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm sick of looking at box kicks and crossfield kicks and, you know, just booting the ball back then. And I think it would be a huge mistake with Willie Leroux at fullback, Colby and Mapimbi on the other wing to start kicking the ball away. I mean, I hope to God the Lions keep the ball when they have possession and don't start booting it back again, because I think they're going to get hammered if they do that.
And there you go again, you see, with the Conor Murray, Ali Price thing. Mm. You know, that could have led into that. Because a lot of, when Conor Murray's in great form, a lot of it is around that strategic kicking. You know, kicking to put them under pressure and stuff like that. Whereas, yes, you are right. With the South African back three, they are absolutely lethal and they will just hoover that up. So you would hope they come out, and that it is literally a two-half game plan. It's that they start the game retaining possession, putting them under pressure to general play and a great attacking lines. And in the second half, maybe when the bench empties, changing the game plan and going to the tactile. So keeping them under pressure, hopefully defending a lead or something like that, or even if we have to chase. But you are right. It's this South African team, you would think, would hoover up just a general kicking game. You know, there has to be more than that.
Seems to be a little bit of niggle going on between Razzie and Gatland as well, adding a little bit of spice to it.
Yeah, as always happens, South Africa giving out about Cowan Dickey's tackling, and now Gatland having a go at the South African TMO, which is a daft scenario. But anyway, look, that's the way it goes. But yeah, look, this, it wouldn't be a Gatland tour if it didn't have a bit of controversy on it. They are, you know, it's something that he always does. He does it very, very smartly to deflect away from the team as well. We've seen him do it quite a few times, and it works. You know, you've got to take your hat off. No matter what people think of him or anything from an Irish point of view, he is tactically very, very smart, very astute on and off the pitch.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. What way do you see it going? What's your honest opinion?
Well, can I give you my dishonest opinion?
Okay.
Well, look, I find it very hard to go against the Lions. You know, I just think there's a lot of positivity throughout this team, and I think if they get any sort of momentum going, it could be very good. But it would take something like what you were talking about, not a kicking game, a different game plan, something that we haven't seen so far on the tour, that for them to take it on. But be under no illusion, they are under a massive, massive, they have a huge challenge ahead of them. Mm. This South African team, yes, it's had its challenges, but they have reverted back to pretty much the World Cup winning team. And there's a reason these guys won the World Cup. They are an immensely calm, clinical, strategic team. And it's a huge challenge for the Lions. It really galls me to say that the Lions are, you know, this could be, because as you know, the winning the first test is a massive, massive thing in the Lions. History shows that the side who wins the first test really has the massive upper hand. Mm. But yeah, Reg, unfortunately, I think they're under pressure.
Yeah, so do I. I think so. I think it'll be a South African victory, but I'd be more than happy to be proven wrong. Okay, Shane, as always, great chatting to you. Really good catching up. Mind yourself, and we'll chat again soon.
Take care, buddy.
Take care. Enjoy the game. All the best. That's Shane Byrne there, of course, Leinster, Ireland and British and Irish Lion himself, giving us a bit of insight. Like me, he just feels it's going to be a bit of an uphill battle. I am very much looking forward to this game. It's suddenly caught my attention, where I wasn't really that interested, I'll be honest with you, a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't thinking too much about it, but all of a sudden now that it's here, I am looking forward to seeing what way it goes. It's intriguing. The world champions at home, with a pretty strong side, going out against a Lions team with some surprise inclusions in it. Can they manage to somehow overcome Rasmus's team? I can't see it, but time will tell. 5 o'clock this evening, it'll all kick off. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, we'll be talking golf. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. The ads just wanted to give us a little bit more there. It's time to turn our attention to golf now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Deirdre Smith. Morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you? Welcome back.
And thank you very much. Great to be back. And speaking of welcome back, I see there Seamus Power got the hero's welcome back himself after winning the Barbasol Championship in the PGA, back to West Waterford, welcomed home with his father, Ned, up the steps and green jackets lining the place. What a wonderful, wonderful story that is.
I couldn't be happier, to be honest. I mean, you know, he's been kind of under the radar, and he's been kind of in the shadow of Lowry and McIlroy for so long, and you know, but this is coming. You know, you and I have talked about it, and we said, look, why not win? You know, why not? Why should he not win? Because he has been doing so well. He's had so many good results, top tens, top fours, top threes over the last month, and that's just reward for all his hard work. And you know, he played with Lowry and McIlroy as a young man. He won three Irish Youth Championships. And again, you know, like Leona Maguire has incrementally improved all the time. And you know, he spoke about that. Look, I'm not one of these sort of Lowrys or McIlroys, he said. I just kind of plod away there in the background. And he's come from a hard-working background and had a lot of tough things happen to him in his life. And obviously just wanted it and kept at it and kept plugging away, and I couldn't be happier. And I think, you know, he's got some real reward for this going forward, you know, a 2-year exemption, and it'll really allow him now just to play golf and to concentrate on his golf. And you know, fair play to him. I know it was a weakened field because the Open was on, but that won't bother him. Even when they were in the weeks before, you know, he held his own with a lot of very, very good players. So you know, he won't care about that. He has his 2-year exemption. He gets an entry into the Tournament of Champions he's in the Players' Championship and the PGA Championship next year. So, I mean, it's marvellous for him.
Oh, it's wonderful, yeah. As you said, it's not that big a surprise to us because we've been monitoring him very carefully and he's been thereabouts for a long time with top 10 finishes and consistent golf, I think, is what you'd have to say about it. Very, very consistent golf.
Yeah, and now he's reached another plateau in his career. You know, hopefully it's going to go over from here. But you know, with the work ethic he has and the belief in what he's doing, I mean that playoff was high pressured last week, and he was cool, calm, and collected. I mean, he chipped in on the first playoff to force Poston to hole out for birdie. And just held his nerve down the stretch and birdied the last to get into the playoff. You know, I mean, they're fantastic qualities to have. And you know, I predict that he's going to go on from this. I really do. I think he could win a major.
Yeah, I funny enough, you know, there's a hunger there in young sports people, no matter what sport they're in, and in particular in golf, I think it has to be probably more so than anything, because it's such an individual game, it's such a head game, it's such a tough graft. You know, lots of lads are going around on European tours and PGA tours in the backs of cars with other lads, you know, pooling together, trying to, you know, scrounge a few bob together just to stay on the tour. And that kind of hunger drives a lot of them on, I suppose. And then you'd argue that when they do get that bit of success, the hunger goes a little bit and they fall off a bit. He doesn't strike me as the type of person that will happen to, though. He just seems to, I don't know, whether it's, you know, he had to do a tough the whole way coming up, losing his mother at 8 and all that kind of stuff. Maybe that's what's driven him on, but I don't think he's going to lose that drive.
I think so. I think he's going to go on from this. I really do. I predict he'll win a major. That's my own feeling, looking at him, watching what he's doing, watching how he goes about things. Very humble, you know, just tremendous belief in what he's doing and just goes about his business. I really do. I think he's going to go on from this. It may take him a little while. To reach something sometimes that, you know, for a few weeks, which is fine, you know, a few months, you can kind of fall off, reach something that you've always wanted in life and stuff. So, you know, it may happen that he may just sort of, you know, fall into the background a little bit, but I honestly think that he will use this to drive himself forward, and, you know, I agree with you on that.
Absolutely. Okay. It's great for Seamus, but equally so, the Open was on, a smaller competition was on at the same time. What a performance from this guy, Morikawa. Cool. You spoke about being calm with Seamus. I mean, this lad is coolness personified, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, they're just coming out of college in America like a conveyor belt, ready to perform. Time wise, you had to serve your time on the tour, and you had to sort of learn the ropes, and you had to kind of come out and get comfortable. And he's certainly thrown that kind of thinking out the window, because his debut in the PGA, and he comes out and he wins the two of them. I mean, it's unprecedented. And you know, I know Jack Nicklaus, you know, was really surprised at how well he has performed. So when you have the likes of Jack Nicklaus surprised at what he's doing, the rest of us should take notice. So, but marvellous iron player, and that's what you need on a links course.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, our own Shane Lowry put in a very gallant defence, 6 under, coming in 12th position. You know, I think the first day did it for him, really. He didn't quite perform the way he did, but the rest of the time he really played very well, and a good performance, it has to be said.
Yeah, sure, and you're right. First day kind of didn't put him out of the tournament, but it just didn't get him on the front foot, and then he played really well and didn't hold a putt in a couple of rounds. Missed a lot of putts when he was in position to hold putts. That's the difference. But what great defence of this title, what a marvellous champion he's been. I know he's had it for 2 years, but, you know, that's not the end of Shane Lowry by any means. Really was great. And pretty on the swing, you know, on the show, even the grounds and the stuff, you know, what the leaderboard is. You know, a very creditable defence of the title.
Absolutely. Deirdre, okay, we're going to let you go there. Thanks very much for all of that. We'll chat to you again next week.
Okay, Reggie.
Great stuff. Deirdre there giving us all of her thoughts. Apologies for the quality of the line on that. It was a little bit poor, but we did our best to keep that going. But Seamus Power, amazing performance by him. Really good win, and everybody, I think, will join us in congratulating him on that win, because it really was a fantastic performance. Okay, another huge weekend of GAA in store for us this weekend. It's really starting to hot up now, and we're going to talk about that. Jane actually had a chat with Declan Drake a little bit earlier on about that. Let's have a listen to what she had to say.
Declan Drake, great to have you on the show as always.
Pleasure, Jane. How are you this morning?
Great. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
All good. So we'll start with the hurlers and their Leinster final clash with Kilkenny. Unfortunately, that ended in defeat to the reigning champions. To beat Brian Cody's team, you really need your full strongest team as well as a break or two, don't you? So Dublin, they got neither.
Yeah, that sums it up perfectly, Jane. The trouble started last Saturday morning when reports of a COVID-related issue broke, and Matty then had to plan without four members of his first team squad, including two starters in Ronan Hayes and Keane O'Sullivan, who are two influential enough members of the team. In fairness, though, you know, the team battled really hard on the night. After 26 minutes, they were level in the game with Kilkenny, but just got a little run on them, the Cats, in the last few minutes of the first half. And, you know, when they get into a position like that, they're a very, very difficult team to stop. They have a serious ambition this year to go one further than they did last year. And they were strong and they were cohesive in the second half. And overall, they were most deserving winners on the night. You can't really argue with it. But it was disappointing for Dublin because, as you say, you do need your full-strength team and a break or two to go your way. And unfortunately, on the night, we just didn't get either.
Yeah, and you spoke to Matty Kenny during the week.
I did indeed. I spoke to him actually after the game, and obviously he was disappointed with the outcome, but still overall quite proud of his charge's efforts.
We talked to the squad through a text this morning, and we said we had to put it at the back of our mind. You know, I talked all year about building a squad during the league. So look, it was an opportunity for the guys to come into the panel of 26 and come on the team. In that first half, Kilkenny started very well, and we came to terms with it. And I think the first half was very, very competitive. And we asked the guys to go out there and to be brave and to compete and take the game to the opposition, and they did that. And look, as the second half wore on, there's no argument that Kilkenny were the better team, and they finished the stronger. Look, we're proud of our guys. We're very, very proud of the way they competed. You know, we've picked up two significant injuries. We lost Stone after the first minute, and then Mark Shute. So there were little knocks we took along the way.
All isn't lost for the lads, though. They do have the All-Ireland quarter-final to look forward to.
They do indeed, yeah. And who will play in that will remains to be seen. That will be answered this afternoon when the next round of qualifiers take place. Cork are playing Clare and Waterford are playing Galway. What we do know is we can't play Galway again if they win, because we've played them in the Championship already. So it'll be Cork, Clare or Waterford will be our opposition next weekend. So look, it's a couple of weeks training and preparation behind them. Hopefully the COVID issues have been alleviated, and we can have our full strength squad available and have a real cut off this quarter final next week.
Mm-hmm. Turning to the footballers and their provincial semi-final Croke Park success over Meath. I suppose at the end of the day, Dec, more questions remain about the Blues than were answered last week. Is that fair?
It is. Yeah, very much Jekyll and Hyde performance, Jane. You know, we spoke to Rona McLaughlin from the Herald on the programme last week about what we could expect from that game, what needed to improve from the defeat of Wexford in the first round. And in fairness, in the first half, Dublin were quite good. They were slick, they were comprehensive, they were moving through the channel as well, and were well in control at half-time, thanks mostly to the goals from the penalty from Cormac Costello and also Rasper from Conor Callaghan. But the first 14-15 minutes of the second half, Meath came out just an absolute transformed team, tore into Dublin, kept them scoreless for the first 15 minutes of the second half, which was a remarkable stat in itself, you know. Now, in fairness to the lads, you know, they rallied in the end, they got the result. But as you rightly say, there are a lot more questions perhaps than answers lingering over this team at the moment. But overall, last Sunday, very much a case of mission accomplished and back into the Leinster final now, where they will play Kildare a week tomorrow at Croke Park. And I took the opportunity to speak indeed to Desi Farrell, the manager, after the game, and this was his impressions of the 70 minutes.
A lot of pleasing aspects in the first half, a lot of displeasing aspects in the second half. You know, plenty food for thought in that second half performance for sure. Was it a little bit of complacency, or did we just take the foot off the gas? We expected Meath to come at us hard, we knew they would, so that was no surprise, but we still found it difficult to deal with it, you know. The core group won out the day in the end, and we finished reasonably strongly and managed the last couple of minutes quite well, but probably should never have been in that position in the first instance.
Interesting. So what are the next steps now in terms of Championship 2021 for Desi Farrell's crew?
Well, they're into the Leinster final against Kildare. You look no further than that, really. You know, after that, it's knockout football all the way, really. You have an All-Ireland semi-final, so it's all happening over the next few weeks, starting with the Leinster final next Sunday.
Okay. The Dublin ladies footballers, they remain firmly on course for a fifth consecutive All-Ireland, TG4 All-Ireland crown. Mick Bohan's side accounting for Waterford in Ballinglass last Saturday in their second game of their 2021 campaign, comfortably enough.
Yes, indeed, in stifling conditions down there, Jane, as it was nationwide last Saturday, indeed, has been all week as well. I think they call it summer, you know. We used to have it for a long time, many, many years ago. But yeah, look, they were deserving winners on the day. Two wins from two, following up on the victory over Tyrone to safely book their place in the quarterfinal of that championship again, which will take place next weekend. So well done to Mick and the girls, and another fine win down there last week.
Just a quick look at the two provincial football finals tomorrow, Cork, Kerry, and of course the big one, Mayo, Galway.
Cork and Kerry's the big one, yeah.
That's up for debate. I think the Mayo Galway one is really all watching.
Look, fantastic opportunity for both counties to play in Croke Park tomorrow. It's an unexpected bonus for both of them, you know. And I think, you know, from last year, you know, Galway were hugely disappointed last year with their championship performance, and they're back this year and they're very determined, as indeed obviously are Mayo, to go the whole way if they can in 2021 as well. And you know, it's knockout football again, Jane. There's no back door, there's no safety net for either of these teams tomorrow afternoon. So the best team over the course of the 70 minutes will win, and there's a very big prize at stake here, because the winners will ultimately play the winners of the Leinster Championship, which we know will either be Dublin or Kildare. So that'll be a return visit to Croke Park for them. But great for the people, because the capacity would have been significantly reduced at McHale Park in Castlebar tomorrow. So I think it's up to 18,000 in Croke Park, so a tremendous opportunity for more people to be able to go and enjoy the game tomorrow.
What about the equally important Cork and Kerry match?
Absolutely, I'm glad you said that, because we've quite a lot of listeners from Cork and Kerry living in the capital as well, James. We wouldn't like to alienate them so early on a Saturday morning. Yeah, Fitzgerald Stadium in Killarney tomorrow afternoon. Unfortunately, going to be 2,500 is the permitted attendance at that. But natural order resumed in the province, if you like, with Cork playing Kerry after last year's unique-ish Munster final, with Cork playing Tipperary. So look, Kerry are a serious force this year, and if their intent, which they ultimately are, of getting back to Croke Park and winning in All-Ireland this year, they have to beat Cork tomorrow afternoon at Fitzgerald Stadium in Killarney. And I think try as Cork will to upset the apple cart tomorrow, I would expect that Kerry will have enough to come through, because obviously they have the pain of last year's Munster semi-final defeat still hurting them, and they'll be anxious to put that behind them and to get back to winning a Munster title again.
Mm-hmm. Great talking to you, Deck, as always, and we'll speak to you next week.
Yeah, please God, Jane. Take care. Have a good week.
Yes, our producer Jane McNamara trying her best to push Mayo, being from Mayo, of course, push Mayo to the top, but Declan having none of it. Okay, we're going to take a quick ad break now. When we come back, we'll be talking to Alan Cawley about the football. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to the final part of Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Now it's time to turn our attention to football. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Absolutely wonderful. Wasn't great or too happy to see Bray Wanderers getting hammered last night, 6-0 by St. Pat's. It was probably to be expected, but 6-0 is still a bit of a drubbing in the FAI Cup. Nice, easy walk in the park for Pat's.
Yeah, it was, Reggie. Yeah, as you say, it was probably to be expected. Pat's are riding high in the Premier Division, going really well. They have aspirations to obviously try and go on and win the league title and overtake Shamrock Rovers. But certainly in the Cup, I think it's a more realistic option for them to obviously win silverware. So, of course, Stevie O'Donnell would have been had eyes all focused on the game last night, and as you say, against Bray. I did expect them to win, but probably not 6-0, Reggie. But it just goes to show the gulf between the First Division and the Premier Division teams. And Bray are obviously mid-table in the First Division, and their main focus is trying to get promoted. So it just goes to show you the gulf, even from mid-table in the First Division to the top of the Premier. It's very, very big. And that's to be expected in a lot of the games across the board. You'll see Premier Division opposition against the lesser opposition. They nearly always come true nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. And no different story for Rovers either, getting the 2-0 victory under their belt.
Yeah, and Galway are obviously even higher than Bray in the First Division. They're second, and again, their main focus is trying to get promoted, and Shells are running away with that First Division, but their main focus, as I say, is trying to get to be in the playoffs now, but with the form that they've shown in recent weeks, Galway, and they'll try and obviously get through via the playoff route, so that'll be their main plan of action now for the next few weeks. But they would have been disappointed, I'd say, to probably not give a better account to themselves. I think Shamrock Rovers, even though it wasn't as big and emphatic a win as St. Pat's, 2-0, I think they were comfortable throughout the night as well. So, and of course, Stephen Bradley, with the squad and the resources he has compared to the other teams, it's very difficult for the lesser teams. And this is where they get caught out, really, Reggie, in nights like this, when you can make changes and bring in other lads who are every bit as good as what you're leaving out. So it always favours the main team, as I say. And of course, Shamrock Rovers, not only are the favourites to win the league, but they'll be favourites to win the FAI Cup as well.
Absolutely. I suppose you mentioned Shelburne there. They got beaten 2-0 by UCD last night. That's probably a result that could have gone a bit either way. I'd say they'll be disappointed with that defeat, Shells.
Yeah, to me, that's a surprise, Reggie. That's definitely the surprise of the night, because now UCD had a really good start to the season. It's kind of tailed off in the last few weeks, but they're still a decent outfit, and they've a lot of front wheeling who's scoring a lot of goals for them. But Shelburne, as I say, are unbeaten in the league, and they're running away with the First Division. So even though that's their main focus, Ian Morris still would have had eyes on maybe having a good cup run, because they built up such a cushion in the league that they could afford to have a cup run and not be distracted by it. So he'll be very disappointed with that 2-0 defeat to UCD. And it was a surprise for me, because again, they should have came through that, but that was the surprise of the round so far, I'd say.
I was at home last night looking through Twitter, and the next thing is my feed started getting taken over with this Athlone Waterford match. What an unbelievable game of football. And that 124th minute goal from the halfway line. Unbelievable stuff.
Absolutely incredible, Reggie. Yeah, and when you think, I suppose, those teams, that the turmoil that those clubs have had in the last 3-4 seasons, crazy stuff really on and off the pitch, and what they served up last night in the Cup, and Athlone were 2 down. They had a bit of everything. Those sendings off, I think both managers got sent off in the end.
Right.
As you said, went to extra time, penalties, goal from the halfway line. That lad that scored the goal from the halfway line was making his debut, Glenn McCauley, and he scored 2 penalties in the game as well. And I never, ever seen anything like it. It reminded you, Reggie, of something like maybe the big strong lad that plays with the under-14s that just touched the ball to him and he lets him just kick it as far as he can. And I never saw a situation like that where they touched it. And looking at it, all the players were lined up to obviously get up front.
Sprint.
And the way you probably
about 8 of them were sprinting up the left-hand side of the pitch.
And just to get up as close to the box, and he was going to obviously punt it up to the box, up to them. Yeah. But then he decides to have a shot from there, and it was absolutely incredible. And the thing about that as well, Reggie, that's a huge pitch in Athlone. So to be able to do that just inside his own half, but the power as well, because it was still flying as it hit the net. I'm nearly sure
Absolutely.
It hit the net on the full. So it was an incredible strike. And just unfortunately, they couldn't go on and win it. They obviously lost on penalties then, but certainly in terms of drama and everything you want in a cup tie.
I think the keeper got a hand to it. I watched it. I think the keeper just managed to get a hand to it. I don't know what the keeper was at or where he was going, but he got back and he just managed to get a hand to it. I'm sure he was thinking, oh my God, what have I done here? But like you said, they got there in penalties in the end anyway. So Yeah,
incredible match. And for anyone who didn't see it, as usually it's all over Twitter now, so people should check out the goal, because just for the strike alone, it's amazing, really.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It really is. I, like you said, it's as good a strike as you'd see anywhere in the world. I see an article there in the Indo this morning by Daniel McDonald, and he kind of sums it up. The FAI AGM, it's such a low-key version. It was a kind of a big thing that John Delaney used to do as a publicity masterclass at the end of the week-long Festival of Football. But they're kind of sneaking this one in quietly under the radar.
Yeah, and I'd much rather it this way, Reggie, than what we used to have, really, because, as you say, it turned into a bit of a PR stunt, really, I suppose. And the funny thing about it, or the ironic thing about it, was that you couldn't ask a question. So for all the razzmatazz about it and the Festival of Football and all this kind of crack, as you say, and the PR stuff, when it came to actually the nitty-gritty and the business side of things, no journalist was allowed to ask a question or sometimes not even get into the thing. So I'd much rather them go about it this way, Reggie. Things seem to be on an even keel, a little bit better now in there at the moment, and just let them work away in the background and try and bring the game forward as much as we can, because we're already miles behind. We can't fall any further behind, really, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully Jonathan Hill, the CEO, will be able to give some sort of a message about where things are going, because it's tough with the pandemic and the debts, and it's 60-odd million and all that kind of stuff. It's not easy. So hopefully he can give some better messaging. I was talking to Ken earlier on a little bit. He doesn't want Pogba to go, which I was a bit surprised about, but I thought he'd
glad to see the back of him.
It looks like...
You know my feelings, Reggie? You know my feelings. I let him go out the door. Yeah. Although then, in fairness, you look at him in the Euros, and he was phenomenal with France. So, I think we had this conversation a few weeks ago. To me, it comes back to the manager at United, and is he getting enough out of him? People would argue, well, at France, he has better players around him, but he was still standing up for France as one of the main men. So, I think he's still capable of doing so much better at United. And for me, I'm not sure. I think he's in a bit of a luxury zone there, and I don't think he gets enough. The manager indulges him rather than demanding from him. So it's a bit of a comfort zone, as I say. I wouldn't be sorry to see him go, because if he goes, you'll probably get big money and you could bring in two or three players. And obviously, Sancho came in yesterday. I still think they need a centre-forward, and I'm surprised they haven't gone. It looks like City are going to get Kane, because they'll probably go all out to get him in terms of money, and I don't think United can match that. But I still think they need a centre-forward, Reggie, and even a centre-half. I know Varane is close to maybe, but they're haggling over 5 or 10 million. Like, if you need someone and as good as that, just pay the extra 5 million, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And what about the Sancho signing? I think that's a good one. He's very young.
Yeah, it is. I wouldn't have paid the money, though, what to pay. Like, it's bonkers money. I don't think he's as good as that now, to be honest with you. But then maybe
what was it meant for in the end?
I think it's close to 85, 90 million, I think. I think so now. I'm not like... But that was what was being touted all along. So I just saw that it was confirmed. But I think it's in and around that anyway.
Yeah.
Now, he is a very talented boy. And as you see, he's young and there's loads of potential in him and all that kind of stuff. But I just think for that money, you want to finish the article, really, you know. Right. And I know it's probably not the lad's fault. We all know the transfer market is crazy. It's not his fault, but he is a talented boy. And I know we probably didn't see a lot of him in the Euros, and people were questioning why he didn't play enough, but he is very talented. He had a brilliant season at Borussia Dortmund, so he will be an addition, all right, but I still think they need a centre-forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, they're probably still looking around for that as well. I didn't get to talk to you, but I think Italy was one of your picks pre-tournament.
I had them down. I was glad. I did think England had a great chance as well, Reggie. Yeah. But I just and Italy were brilliant. Italy were the story of, really, because that opening night they kicked off with the 3-0 win against Turkey, and that kind of set them up, and they never stopped really from there. They were brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
And it was good to see a team without any real superstars, and it was more about the team ethic and the spirit and the unity amongst them. And now, I think Spain should have beat them in the semi-final. Spain were brilliant in the semi-final. Definitely. And again, going back to centre-forward, had they a proper centre-forward, they would have won. But it would have been a travesty if they beat them,
because Spain weren't the better team, I felt. But, you know, I thought Italy were a better team than them overall.
Overall, probably, yeah. But on that night now, Spain did really well. Spain got better as the tournament went on, to be fair to them, you know. So, and they're a young team. They'll come again. They'd be one now I'd be watching out for the World Cup, because if they can unearth a centre-forward going into that World Cup, they definitely have serious talent in all the other parts of the pitch. So, it was a great tournament overall. It was absolutely brilliant.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was one of the best. I don't know whether it was because of COVID or anything else. One of the best tournaments for a long time. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It really was. Yeah, you're going all Lions action now for the next two or three weeks, Reggie.
Oh, yes.
Very good. Will you enjoy that? I've had my fun now for the last few weeks. You could have your fun now for the next two or three weeks.
Well, I enjoyed the Euros, no doubt about it. I really did.
Yeah.
We'll enjoy this Lions as well. Okay, Alan, that's brilliant. We'll chat to you again next week.
Brilliant. Thanks, Reggie. See you later.
Take care. All the best.
Bye-bye.
That's Alan Cawley there of Cawley's Call fame, giving us his thoughts on the football. Yeah, and as I said, if you get a chance, have a look at that Waterford Athlone game last night. The goal at the end was unbelievable. Well worth checking out. But that's all we've got time for on this week's show. Thank you for listening to us here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. With thanks to InsureMyEvent.ie. Our producer today, as always, was Jane McNamara. And I'd like to also thank all of the guests who joined us here on the show today. We'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a wonderful week. And come on the Lions.